MDMA, street name ecstasy or Molly. Over 3/4 of the people in the trials no longer had PTSD symptoms after 3 psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy sessions. I agreed to the therapy. After 1 year, I was no longer suicidal. I saw that there was a future. I felt like I had some sort of control over my life. In the States, we had the egg in the frying pan. This is what drugs do to your brain. All of those stereotypes. Hey, wait a minute. This substance can actually be used as a healing modality. This therapy worked, and it works so well, and it can help millions of people. Suddenly, you can start to see joy in life. You can start to see a future.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to have Jill Sitnick on the show, who is an author and content creator who talks about psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, which is quite a mouthful, I have to say. So, Jill, just explain to me how you get into the realms of psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, what that really means, and also perhaps preconceptions or maybe misconceptions that people have about psychedelics. Perhaps explain exactly what that really is.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Ted, first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And I fell into psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy kind of by accident. I was having a huge panic attack, and we can get into my story later, but just at a surface level, I was having a non-ending or never-ending panic attack. Very long story short, my therapist diagnosed me with PTSD due to childhood trauma that I had basically ignored. I was diagnosed at 47. She was in a program to become a psychedelic-assisted psychotherapist, and she said, go take a look at the research that's on MAPS.org, MAPS.org, which is the, you ready for a mouthful, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, because they were already in their phase 2 trials of showing that the psychedelic MDMA, or the street name ecstasy or Molly, the MDMA trials had shown that over 3/4 of the people in the trials no longer had PTSD symptoms after 3 psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy sessions. I agreed to the therapy. After 1 year and 3 psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy sessions, I no longer qualified for that diagnosis. I was no longer suicidal. I saw that there was a future. I felt like I had some sort of control over my life. And in the States, the FDA has just received the clinical 3 trials to go ahead and approve this therapy. So it's estimated that it'll be approved sometime during the summer. I had no inside information into the FDA. And I just thought it was really important that because this therapy worked and it works so well and it can help millions of people, that I wrote my memoir detailing my year of healing. I wrote a workbook for people who want to kind of get started. And I created an YouTube channel, an educational YouTube channel, to deal with the stigma that you mentioned, because psychedelics, I was a child of the 80s. In the States, we had the egg in the frying pan. This is what drugs do to your brain. So I had all of those stereotypes. And I just wanted my voice to be an advocate to say, hey, wait a minute, this substance can actually be used as a healing modality. Mm-hmm. So that's me kind of very quickly. And so I guess I would say, what questions have I now created?
Okay. What I would say is, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. And you've used a lot of terms, which I'm sure it might be worth to get some definitions of those things. But yes, there are those preconceptions about psychedelics, about drugs in general. Really, what I would ask you is, you know, let's say, just really briefly, like an elevator pitch, or I suppose a lift pitch, as we would call it, an elevator pitch, idea of what is the benefit? How does the benefit come about? Okay, because it's all well and good saying, okay, people have seen the benefit,
How does it work?
We can always have a correlation between lots of different factors, but How does it actually benefit? And how do you fight back against the stigma, as you say, very, very briefly?
Yeah. So what's really interesting about MDMA, it is not the classic psychedelic where you get the visuals. MDMA is actually an empathogen. It's all about connection. That's one of the reasons why MDMA or ecstasy is so popular at raves, because it makes people feel really good, makes people feel really connected. In a trauma environment or with a trauma patient, when we are in a PTSD cycle or in fight or flight, and you're going to see me do this a lot because like my shoulders were up to my ears for most of my life. I was in a hypervigilant state most of my life, making sure that I was safe and secure. I just thought I was like super type A productivity girl, corporate girl eventually. No, it was all pretty much run by childhood trauma in terms of safety. The MDMA session, it calms the body's trauma response. And for the very first time in a session, I was actually able to explain to my therapist and my guide, there should be two people there if it's a therapeutic use of MDMA, that I was 1,000% sure that if my father was in the room, he would have his hands around my neck the way he did to my mother at a parent conference meeting. And then after the session, because the majority of the healing happens after an MDMA session. So think of it like, you know how you have a procedure and then you have physical therapy? Mm-hmm. The physical therapy in terms of psychedelic assisted psychotherapy is like, it's called integration, where you have to kind of live your life, experience your triggers. And what happened with me almost within an hour of my first journey is that I'll hold my hand up over here. I started to see my childhood memories like they were on television or they were on a movie screen. And I was no longer experiencing those memories from a toddler. So like a toddler getting beaten up by her father, I wasn't scared. I wasn't experiencing it from a toddler point of view. I was looking at that memory saying, hey, you know what? The universe was not against that child. That father really should not have been doing that. I was able to reframe a lot of those memories that were so painful and had caused so much stress. And that's actually how the healing happens. And then I think you had a second question about the stigma of it or how am I fighting it?
Yeah.
That's really the reason for the YouTube channel. So the memoir is very real. The memoir was written. I had journaled constantly way back in another career. I was an English teacher. And so I love writing. I was journaling like crazy. And it's really a great integration tool to kind of see the images that your mind is bringing you. And so the book is very much my healing experience. You get to know way too much about me. And what I found was that people were reading the book and they were really interested, but they were a little bit too focused on my actual story because my dad and mom, they really should never have been parents. And so the YouTube channel deals, in my opinion, way more on the actual therapy, how you set your intentions, what to expect during that day, what to look for in doctors, what integration is like. And it's my hope that treating this subject in the educational way that I am, that people will start to shift their views in terms of at least MDMA for PTSD. That's my goal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the result of the drugs is that you, in a way, kind of transcend the trauma, and then you're able to look at it from the outside as an adult or as an as somebody disassociated with it, because not necessarily trauma is happening to children, it could be adult trauma. So then looking back to it as an outsider, and able to better cope with what happened. Is that it in a nutshell?
So you know when you kind of look at something and suddenly, the phrase like seeing it through somebody else's eyes, or you haven't walked in someone's shoes, you can't get their perspective. In my opinion, my healing came from changing perceptions. My PTSD was all about fear. Mm-hmm. I was terrified the universe was out to get me, that I had to hide myself. my partner of over 20 years had passed away. I was thoroughly, thoroughly convinced that's because the universe was again out to get me. And I had started to find success career-wise. So, of course, the universe had to take something away. The MDMA therapy, healing my PTSD, healing or changing the perspective of that little toddler or that 10-year-old who got thrown out of our house or that 16-year-old that got thrown out of our house or, you know, any myriad of things, changing the perception or perspective that it was not the universe. It was very simply the unfortunate event of having two parents who were not equipped to parent. Mm-hmm. And when you shift that perspective, all of a sudden, wait a minute, the universe isn't out to get me. I don't need to be scared all the time. My shoulders are down. I don't have that PTSD, those PTSD symptoms. And suddenly you can start to see joy in life. You can start to see a future. That's how it works at a very granular level. For me, it was memory by memory. And I still, to this day, I get certain memories that pop up and I'm like, huh, I always looked at it a certain way. And maybe that really wasn't the way it was.
No, it's interesting because I really did wonder how it was that it actually gave a positive effect. Or like you say, it's the starting point. Because once you can see things in that different way, then you can really start to get to grips with the treatment. I think, and I'm sure you'd be able to tell me where there are critics. I'm sure there are probably many, many different things that, or many different arguments that are given. And I'll ask you about that. But one thing that sort of immediately springs to mind is that. That change, that changing from sort of being in the moment and being that person and perhaps, still feeling like you are the victim in that moment rather than looking at it from the outside. Is that something that is absolutely and categorically down to the psychedelics, or is there an element of placebo? Is there an element of, okay, this is how we think you're going to feel afterwards, and then that kind of projects that onto you? Is it that, or is it perhaps something else or something else in the process, even if it's to some extent not the psychedelics, but actually, you know, the holistic treatment that you're having?
I think that's a great question. So I'm going to refer to, since I had a positive healing experience, I can speak to that, but I can also point people to maps.org, where they actually talk about their, about the clinical trials. And I believe they published their findings in a journal called Nature. So you can actually deep dive and look at all the numbers. And there is a small percentage of people who went through their trials and found healing simply, I'm going to say just, I don't mean to be just, but simply only with the talk therapy portion. So there certainly are people, depending on their level of trauma, depending on where they are in their healing cycle, can certainly benefit from talk therapy. Where I was easily, by the time I walked into my therapist's office with the PTSD symptoms to the beginning of the first journey. And when you're talking about psychedelics for therapeutic use, you use the word journey, whereas recreationally you use the word trip. So that was easily 6 months. And that was 6 months of me being suicidal, not seeing a future. I could not believe that I was not going to be on the street, poverty stricken, that things were just bad were going to happen. So I think there's a huge difference in symptoms when it comes to PTSD. Certainly some people can really be super successful, but in the States, we have a terrible problem with, veterans not getting treated super well with PTSD symptoms. Mm-hmm. And I'm hesitant to throw out statistics without backing it up, but I've heard the, over 100 veterans a day either attempt or commit suicide. So we have a pretty decent problem over here with PTSD, let alone people like me with child abuse, but with veterans. And I think if there was something that would had already been out there with a placebo effect, people would have been all over it. That's not what's going on here. And I think the second question you had was about, it was something about convincing people that, what's the major pushback I get? I think that was the question.
Yeah.
Am I on track?
Yeah.
So what's really interesting is that, first of all, I don't have the stereotypical persona as somebody who does drugs. I don't know what it's like where you are over here. It's, you know, I would have rainbow hair and lots of piercings and all that kind of stuff. And here I am, a previous tech girly at Microsoft and Amazon, suddenly talking about psychedelics. So all of a sudden people are like, huh?
You don't look like a stoner. Let's put it that way.
I don't look the, you know, I had one experience with ecstasy before my therapist introduced this idea to me, and she had to talk me into it. I had to go look at the clinical research. So I had the same kind of stereotypes. I think the pushback I get is, number one, ooh, it must have been a lot of fun because, you know, drugs are fun. Number two, did it really work? And number three, oh, that wouldn't be for me, or, you know, that's just not for everybody. So over here we have we have decades of media propaganda that all drugs are bad. And what's in people's minds are kind of the outlier stories. I mean, people are using ecstasy every single weekend in this country at raves and at parties, but you'll hear somebody talking about, you know, I heard someone jumped off of a bridge or whatever. And they're not talking about, they're not asking what was the dosage? What else did the person have in their system? What was their mindset before they took this drug? There's just a couple of stories out now where, you know, had MDMA laced with other chemicals. So there's all these stories out there when really, if the story was about somebody drinking and doing something ridiculous, the first thing we would ask is, well, how much did the person drink? What was their mindset? And, you know, who was around them? We should be asking those same questions when it comes to drugs like MDMA or magic mushrooms, psilocybin.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, certainly in terms of looking at the numbers, because you can always use the same that kind of it's a bit of a trope, really, when it comes to the talking about the risks of whatever it may be. It's always then compared with road traffic accidents. And you know how dangerous it is to get behind the wheel of a car. Things, there are obvious things like air travel. Well, you can compare that because you know it's travel. Right. But yeah, obviously,
great example.
There's going to be a lot more people who are killed on the road than are killed because they're using psychedelics or any kind of drugs, I suppose.
Especially in a therapeutic, one of my guides was a medical doctor.
Well, absolutely. I think it's easy to sort of use those sorts of examples to compare risk on a very statistical level. I myself am quite a pragmatic person, and I'm probably likely to look at those stats and say, well, obviously the benefits can certainly outweigh the risks. But then again, you could say, well, what is most dangerous to Americans on a daily basis? Is it playing Russian roulette, or is it driving a car? Now, statistically, you could say it's more dangerous to drive a car. That's where the statistics don't necessarily match up to reality. And the one thing that I would say about, and I'm sure you're going to, you know, explain how things are done on a clinical basis, and I will ask you about that. But, sure. I mean, certainly my mother was a registered mental nurse. So a psychiatric nurse in the UK, obviously, throughout her whole career. And she worked with a lot of people, and a lot of young people who had, I mean, we talk about people having a bad trip. She was dealing with people who are on a bad trip for the rest of their lives. People with, you know, severe difficulties, tortured souls from their you know late teens for the entirety of their life, and that has an impact. that does have real impact, and it does make you look at things slightly differently. I know that those sorts of stories would certainly, etched in my mind, and obviously hers as well. And I think a lot of people look at those sorts of, I know, we get the headlines. You always get the headlines. You always get the scare stories and so on and so forth. Yep. Something is always being vilified in the news. We know that.
Right.
But, I don't think that necessarily comes from a bad place.
Well, I don't know. We're seeing an uptick in the States with the psychedelic reporting or reporting of psychedelics. And it's very clear when there's an editor who needs some extra clicks because the headline is negative and the body of the article is positive. So it's interesting how it unfolds by publication over here in the US.
Mm. Yeah. So tell me then, in terms of the process, because I presume, I mean, as you say, you're not sitting around, you're not all in a field. You haven't got the music playing. We'll talk about the effects, but in terms of the clinical setting, and presumably in terms of dosage, I imagine this is what is termed as a micro dose. Is that the right sort of terminology?
Okay, so I think what surprises people is when I throw out my statistics that. So I had three therapeutic journeys over the course of a year. If you look at every journey as like a package, 40% of the time, can you tell I was a teacher? I like to talk with my hands. 40% of the time was preparing for the journey, talking about the issues I wanted to deal with, figuring out, asking any questions, normal psychotherapy, normal weekly or biweekly conversations with my therapist, working up to what my intentions were, what I wanted to heal. For me, it was all about fear. Why am I so scared? Why do I think the universe is out to get me? 20% of the time is the day that you are working with the psychedelic medicine. So on that day, my therapist and guide, who is a medical doctor, so there should be two people in the room with you. I wouldn't say it was a mini dose. It was an appropriate dose for my height and my weight. And I purposely don't talk about dosage because I'm not a doctor. And it was just very, I actually don't even know. I have an idea of what was given, but that was not my thing. Same thing. I don't even pay attention to my Tylenol, but whatever. That journey can last 5 to 8 hours. So it's a whole day. It's 20% of the process. The next 40% to get me to a full 100% is the days, weeks, and months after the psychedelic journey called integration, where you're living your life, you're seeing your triggers, or you're dealing with memories and you're changing your perspective. So as you're going through integration and you're healing, when you start to butt up against the fears that won't shift, that's when you know that you're ready for another psychedelic journey. So my first journey was September, my second journey was December, and my third journey wasn't even until June of the following year. It took a long time with that integration. So it's if you think about it as a medical procedure, the way that our insurance companies are starting to try to figure out how to bill it and how to code it and things of that sort, the closest thing I can come up with is like a surgery that, you know, it takes you a week or two or longer to prepare for. You then have the surgery and then you have the healing process. And if you don't pay attention to the healing process, you're not really going to get very far. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the best analogy that I can come up with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What people listening to this and watching will want to know is, how does it feel?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I get
how does it feel in the moment? I mean, we're not, you know, expecting sort of kaleidoscope eyes and all that sort of thing, or seeing stars or whatever it may be. But can you describe that journey as it happens?
I can do the best that I can, because when you're in an enhanced state, you don't remember, or at least I don't. I haven't met anybody who does. You don't remember minute by minute. But my doctors recorded my journeys on my phone. So I'm very lucky. We had tech glitch on the second journey, but I've got two of my therapeutic journeys in transcript. So the first thing I can tell you is that I didn't immediately fall asleep. for the very first, in my very first journey, for the first time in my life, I heard my own inner voice. Like, you know, when you're just kind of like wandering around and you're thinking kind of thoughts and suddenly you're, something inside you says, oh, go do that or whatever. I had never heard that voice before. It was the first time my inner self, like I could calm my body down enough. And it was funny. I described her as a smart, snarky woman. This smart, snarky woman is talking to me. And my therapist got a nice little smile out of that one. And the rest of the journey for me was a mix of talking about my fear of my father, telling my guide and my therapist that I fully believed I didn't belong on this planet. There was really no reason for me to exist. My guide gently pushing against any harmful commentary from me, like, hey, Jill, maybe you do deserve to exist, and we can have a conversation about how that conversation happened. Mm-hmm. And then what the chemical structure, what the medicine does, the MDMA in this case, sometimes it makes you just kind of want to close your eyes. And I always had an eye mask with me. And so it would be periods of being very quiet with the eye mask, just kind of letting the medicine do whatever it needed to do. I like to say that this is my terminology. This is not any research or terminology. I like to say that it kind of marinated the trauma memories or found the trauma memories when my eyes were closed. And then I would just kind of take my eye mask off, pop up, and be talking again. Now, I am a chatty person. So just because that's the way my session went, that is absolutely not any sort of like, this is how they all go. But 90% of them, if you look online, you're going to see images of somebody laying down with two guides and eye mask. I don't know why I say eye mask, but like, you know what I mean? Something to cover your eyes. That's the image, because when you're, when the medicine is working, you don't really want to be distracted. But it's a very calm, again, it's an empathogen. It makes you feel connected. It calmed my body down enough to start dealing with some really scary subjects. Mm.
It's disappointing in a way that, you know, there's not a great, great memory of what happened. I kind of imagined some sort of vivid dream that you were going to, you know, tell us about your, you know, some journey within a journey after that you went on. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's nothing. There's no hyperbole here. There's no, oh my gosh. Now my third journey, when we needed to add a little bit of psilocybin, a little bit of magic mushrooms, then there was some really immensely healing visuals, but mostly with MDMA, which is what is being FDA approved. It's a very calming, for a trauma person, it could be one of the first times in their lives that they remember being calm and being able to talk about things without their bodies flipping out.
Okay, let's talk about the results. Obviously, you're writing about it, you're talking about it. So, I think would be interested to know exactly how you feel now. Where is your PTSD? And how are you doing in yourself?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, thank you for asking. So at the end of that first year, so my third journey was in June, the integration through the summer, so almost September to September, I was then no longer suicidal. When I thought about my future, I just didn't see a black cave. I actually saw color. I had a bit of joy. I had hope. And so I then no longer qualified for that PTSD diagnosis. In my mind, I healed a good number of like capital T traumas through that process that allowed me to kind of move through life and then realize, hey, wait a minute, I am still being triggered by something. What is this? And I went on to then heal a lot of like lowercase T traumas. And I think the biggest thing in terms of the healing, I heard somebody talking about the idea of healing from PTSD in any modality is the ability, or healing from trauma is the ability to recognize in life when tough things come up. And instead of the PTSD physical reaction taking over and you're just caught up in that fight or flight, the healing or the knowledge of the proof that you've healed, that's a better way of saying, sorry, it took me three words to get there. The proof that you've healed is that you can then have a reaction to something, look at it and say, okay, wait, why am I responding this way? Let me work through it. And that's 1,000% where I am now. You know, life is not just running through the roses. I still had the childhood that I had, but my ability to not become, my nervous system to not completely be overrun when little things happen that in that, you know, 4 years ago would have been, I'm not safe. Mm-hmm. No, that's the difference now is being able to handle life and see joy and respond more appropriately to stressors. That's the best way I can say it.
So it's not just those things that might trigger PTSD. It's new things, new experiences that will, you know, will you've got a coping mechanism or a new coping mechanism or a new way of looking at it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Something happens that reminds me of my mother. A great example is that there's a certain personality type that really irritates me. It really irritates me because it reminds me of my mother. Well, before I would do everything possible to not deal with that person. Now I recognize what that is. I can, as opposed to it being a level 10, oh, get away, that person's dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's a level 2 or 3. Oh, I'm responding that way because that's how my mother acted. This is a completely different person. Relax. Yeah. So that's kind of how it works.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now you've had this treatment. Now you've seen those results. Yeah. Off the back of that, apart from what we just talked about in terms of how you perhaps cope with things, you know, perhaps in a new way, yeah, when new experiences pop up, have you had any kind of, apart from obviously the burden of having PTSD taken away, have you had any other side effects or positive side effects to speak of?
There really aren't side effects to MDMA. There, mm-hmm. It's not like there's any, in the traditional sense of side effects, where like you take, you know, take a pain reliever and maybe you get a headache from it or something like that.
I don't mean like that. I don't mean like, oh, you know, tripling your joints or anything like that. What I mean, yeah, is, have you noticed anything else in terms of your, perhaps your behavior, your outlook, apart from what we talked about, that you think could be down to those treatments?
Oh, well, you know what? Let me answer that a different way. Okay. So I had that 1 year of really intense psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. Moving then forward, I think it was like 9 or 10 months after I asked my doctors for another one, I was still kind of, I felt like I had some cobwebs. I had some weird tendrils of fear, things of that sort. And then fast forward, that I've gone on some retreats. I've enjoyed understanding how my brain, how all the stories I've created about myself, how they kind of started. So I've enjoyed that kind of experience, you know, heading to a different country where things are legal and you know, enjoying a retreat. Mm-hmm. But last October, I had a loss in my personal life. I wound up having some emotional flashbacks to the day that my partner of over 20 years had passed away. And I even still start to tear up. I spiraled. I went into an immediate, life is ending. Life is lonely. There's no reason to be here. And I was like, why did he have to die? And this loss was not a death. This was kind of a minor loss, but it triggered this whole other trauma that I didn't even know existed. Reached out to my doctors, had an MDMA journey to just deal with that trauma point. And I did. In the MDMA journey, I had this lovely image of, well, I shouldn't say it was lovely. It was lovely healing it. I had this image of myself sitting on the sofa the day after Carl had passed. And I had this huge like hole in my chest. And my integration was basically me telling myself, everything's okay. Life goes on. There is joy. And I'm a very visual imagery kind of person. And through my integration, that whole kind of got knitted up and I healed that trauma point. So what I'll say to answer your question, I tell that whole story because if I hadn't gone through this MDMA therapy years ago, I never would have recognized that what I was experiencing was a massive trauma point that I needed to heal. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, the Friday before the treatment, I was a mess. I was in tears. I was mildly like, why am I even on this planet? There's no point. To the Monday or Tuesday after the treatment, where I was like, okay, we're good. I understand where this came from. I'm healing it. So I think it was fascinating. This whole time, I thought I had dealt with all the capital T traumas, and then there was one kind of hiding. It's really important. And thank goodness this treatment was available, because I don't know any other way that I would have been able to get out of. I feel like it was a trauma storm. It was emotional flashbacks. It was awful. It was really awful. I'm so thankful that this healing modality is available.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the availability. So you've said in terms of testing and research, there are approvals. What are some of the legal implications and situations in other nearby countries? Because I don't suppose that's the same. And of course, having a slightly different system with separate states making their own law, is there a distinction there as well? Can you just talk us through that? Or is that a lot to talk through?
So first of all, Australia's first. Australia already approved this therapy. They're moving along faster than the United States. Right. United States, the FDA labeled this treatment breakthrough therapy back in like 2016, 2017. Don't quote me on that specific date, but it was years ago when they first started, because the FDA recognized that this particular treatment didn't have any sort of competition. There wasn't anything on the market that was giving the kind of results that this was giving. So MAPS, Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, got the breakthrough therapy for MDMA. One of our universities, Johns Hopkins, they got the breakthrough therapy distinction for psilocybin, magic mushrooms for depression. So the FDA has been involved in all of this, but in the US things move slowly, which is okay. You know, we have to protect people and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So the MAPS organization, and there's recently been an offshoot of MAPS, but basically all of the clinical trial data is in front of the FDA. It's assumed that it'll be approved in 2024. I keep hearing summertime, but I'm not in the know, so don't quote me if that doesn't happen in the summertime. And then after that approval, our department of our DEA, our drug enforcement group, they have 3 months to reschedule MDMA. And from my reading, the way I understand it, it's going to be that it gets scheduled in a way that doctors running a clinical practice can utilize it in their practice. It's not like Jill can just go get a prescription for MDMA at the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. Canada's also moving forward, kind of thinking through some things. In terms of our states, I think all of our states are kind of looking at what the federal government is going to do, and then they're just going to want to make sure the infrastructure is in place. We had a lot of drama around cannabis in the US because of the infrastructure problems. So I want this therapy to move a little quicker so it can help more people, but I also want it to move at a pace that allows for the infrastructure to be built so that people can be helped. So, I mean, I would assume, and you know what happens when you assume, 2025, maybe it'll start to be available for folks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that is a sort of across the board kind of thing. Well, I guess the FDA, the F is stands for federal. Am I right?
Oh my gosh, you're gonna be blanking out. Yes.
Federal FDA. Drug agents. I mean, this is something that would be across the whole country, I guess. So it's not a case of, okay, everybody's doing their own approvals and going through the whole same, you know, process and so on and so forth, because it would be terrible. I mean, particularly where you've had the benefit and you're an advocate for this, definitely. And sort of spreading the word, it would be very disheartening for you to be then in a position where the benefits that you've had, you're not seeing other people have. just because of red tape getting in the way, because of, you know, perhaps it might be budgetary problems or, you know, like you say, the stigma, there might be, you know, some sort of narrative against it. It doesn't take a lot.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see which states move quicker in terms of the infrastructure to get it done. But, and it's also interesting, there are a number of states who have tried to conduct their own clinical trials, because, I mean, that's what's happening. There's clinical trials going on with every psychedelic substance at this point, some government, some not private. Our veteran association literally just like 2 weeks ago said they're going to start doing some clinical trials. So it's coming, but for me, for the people who are suffering, I wish it was now, but we'll wait till it gets done properly.
So just before you leave us, just let me know, really what are your plans? What's next for you? Because obviously you're pushing this, you're telling people your story, you're trying to give, you know, practical information and advice, and you're creating this content, and you're writing about psychedelics in this context. Mm-hmm. Let's assume everything works out the way you want it to, and let's say it's 2025 and, you know, things are moving. Where are you going next? What's your next thing?
Well, I like to say that I can't see around corners. So when people ask me that all the time, because really I'm in this really quiet space right now where I'm creating this content, but nobody can really do anything with it. My assumption, I'm a teacher at heart. I'm very mission driven to help people. I'm assuming that once this becomes more available, there's going to suddenly be an onslaught of questions. And that's when I will probably get really busy.
Yeah.
And any opportunity I can to share my story of the triumph and the struggle, the reality of what this is not a turnkey solution. This is something that requires work. You know, my tagline, I worked so hard on my tagline. I was like, what is it? What do I do? And I demystify MDMA therapy for PTSD. And so whether that's patients or practitioners, that's kind of what I see my role in. So we'll see. You know what? When you'll be the first one to know when I know what happens.
Okay. I'd be really, really pleased to have you back on when we've got even more developments. And you can let us know where everything's up to. In the meantime, we've talked about your book, we've talked about your content. Where do people find it? And how do we find out more? As well as finding out more and about reading your book, if somebody feels like they are in crisis, I mean, obviously I'm talking about in the States, who are they talking to? What is it they want to be asking for?
And that's the tough part right now. That's this weird limbo, because I have had some people reach out in crisis in the US and overseas. YouTube has a much farther reach than I would have thought. Mm. And it's a challenge right now because this particular therapy is illegal right now in the States. So you see a lot of people using medical tourism to go to countries where different psychedelics are legal. You have a lot of good people trying to do good things in those countries. And you also have some people who are just kind of in it for the money. So unfortunately, you have to kind of do your due diligence, ask around. Some internet searching on the internet can actually lead you to some interesting places. Even like Meetup in the States, we have a website called Meetup where you can meet up with different people. There's lots of psychedelic groups. So it's really the barrier of entry right now to start getting information is not that tough. Mm-hmm. Treatment is a little tougher right now. I will admit that. I have a bunch of resources on my website in terms of like the psychedelic assisted psychotherapist. There's a practitioner organization. There's different groups, especially if you're a veteran, that you can communicate with and find out what their healing modalities are. And my educational stuff is all on YouTube. I'm at The Journey Sage. So you just throw into a search engine, either Jill Sitnick or at The Journey Sage. Mm-hmm. And really right now, that's what I'm doing. People are asking me questions. I'm telling them the books that I read. I'm telling them my symptoms. I'm telling them how long it took. I'm just answering the questions that people kind of hear about MDMA therapy, but there's all this research versus somebody who actually says, hey, wait, this is kind of how it worked from a patient experience. So that's unfortunately, that's kind of all I can do and help people frame it so that maybe they'll be ready for when it's available.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jill, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story and obviously explaining what can be achieved with psychedelics in a clinical setting. It's really interesting to hear that. And also very encouraging because, you know, we're talking about these approvals. If we are talking about perhaps being there in, you know, in a year or 18 months time, that is encouraging, you know, compared to how long it can take for these things. So let's not hold our breath, but let's wait and fingers crossed. So thanks for being on, and we will do a catch up, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was delightful.
That conversation was recorded back on the 17th of January 2024. If you've got any comments, and I'm sure you have, please do put them in the comments section below. If you've got more to say, a different point of view, or you want to be on the show, please do get in touch. You can DM me at Ted James Media. Until next time, thanks for watching. Goodbye.